This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
O'Neal drives one the other way. That's headed out toward right field. He's done it again! The unstoppable opening day machine! Tyler O'Neal has homered for a sixth consecutive year on opening day!
Is that good? 6 years in a row on opening day? I mean, that's a streak. 6-0 now, Toronto losing to Baltimore. Not great. I mean, season started like an hour ago. 6-0. Game's not over. Fourth inning. The parent club of the Bisons trailing the Orioles on this opening day. By the way, the last caller with the Bisons death story. I haven't found it yet, but a couple people are tweeting that when Johnny Bench was in high school, there was an accident and at varying accounts, but that there were fatalities in this accident. But, you know, it was not when he played for the Bisons. I think he broke his thumb playing for the Bisons. Much, you know, not good, but
it's not great.
Not fatal.
Correct.
Pat Malacaro joins us now. He'll be broadcasting Bisons games again this season. That's exciting. The opener is tomorrow. Pat, thanks for jumping on with me.
Happy to do it, Mike. And actually, the two Johnny Bench stories that relate to the Bisons, you're right. He did break his hand catching with the team in one of his first games in with the Bisons, and that's why he had his hand in front, and now he hit his hand behind. But also, he is the only player in professional baseball to hit a grand slam off of Jim Palmer, and that game was played in Hyde Park because several games had to be moved from Buffalo, and there's a funny story about that. Basically, Jim Palmer, this is the only time in his career he gave up a grand slam. It was to Johnny Bench here in Western New York up in Niagara Falls.
How about that? Was that at Sal Magley Stadium, or was it even that?
I believe it was at Hyde Park. It was called Hyde Park Stadium at the time.
Okay. And Palmer might have been in Rochester, pitching for Rochester?
Yes. Earl Weaver was the manager, I believe, and basically said, don't worry about this kid, just throw a pitch, and he did, and Bench hit it.
And Palmer never gave up a slam in his career after that, in Major League career. That is so good. That's a much better story than the whole team died in a bus crash. That is much better. Good for you, Pat. Bench was on with us once, and he talked about the injury, and what, he had his right hand behind his glove? Is that how he would do it?
Yes.
Okay.
And then he got hit by either a foul tip or just didn't catch it correctly, and that's why he eventually would put his hand behind his back.
Behind
that
his
way
back.
That wouldn't happen again.
Yeah, I can picture that. That's so good. So the Bisons this year, how does it look, Pat? I mean, Candell, the manager, is I wasn't sort of aware that he's coming up on like some pretty good milestones as the Bisons manager.
Yeah, this is his fifth season with the team. He actually, if you're a Blue Jays fan, you may recall in 2022, he was promoted to the interim bench coach position when John Schneider was installed as the Blue Jay manager at the time. So really, it'll be about 4.5 years if Casey, from the start of the season, manages all the way to the end. He's approaching 300 wins, which only one other manager in the modern era from 1985 until now has ever done. So he's in about 266, I believe, is the number for Casey right now. So he's really closing in on 300. And then Marty Brown, who's in the Buffalo Baseball Hall of Fame, has the record of 312 wins as a Bisons manager over parts of three seasons. Four seasons. He would be the next one on the list, the only one above him on the list. So Casey could get there this year if the Bisons even just play 500 baseball. He should get to that mark over 150 games.
Yeah, you would think. I guess maybe the only way he doesn't is if the Toronto thing goes so badly. Maybe they call him up there, but yeah, you would think so. Marty Brown. So is Marty Brown the manager of the last championship team?
Yes, 2004, and then he was the manager again in 2005 when they lost to Indianapolis in five games, and also returned in the first year of the Blue Jay affiliation in 2013. He was back in affiliated baseball. He went over to Japan for a while and was managing the Blue Jays minor league system for a couple of years and just happened to be back in Buffalo again.
Okay. I was at least one of those playoff games in 04. I mentioned earlier today, came to just really get into the Cleveland team that when all those, like, something like 22 out of 25 of those guys had played for Buffalo.
It was the golden era of baseball here, at least in the modern era to me, of Bison baseball. You think about championship corner out beyond left field. It was almost every single year. If the Bisons didn't win the division from 1997, the old American Association, going to the IL in 98, the International League, pretty much all the way through 2005, there's only one or two years that the Bisons did not make the playoffs. And that championship team between Grady Sizemore, Brandon Phillips, Johnny Peralta, I think Cliff Leave at one point was on that team. I mean, the pitching staff was loaded. You're right. I mean, there was just so much talent. And really, we saw all that talent on display for about a 10-year window in the Indians affiliation. Hoping that the Bisons can get back to something like that here. Casey is the manager, was the last manager to manage a division winner. It was in 2021 when the team started the year in Trenton and finished the year here in Buffalo.
Right.
So hoping that we can get back to some of those glory days of seeing all those guys promoted to the big leagues. Kind of like, look, you know, when a team has injuries and things don't go your way, you see the prospects go up. That's kind of what we saw last year with the Bisons being promoted to Toronto. And some of those players will start here this year again because the Blue Jays made some offseason acquisitions and now we're able to let those players develop more.
Right. Alan Rodon is up there, and he is in the starting lineup today. Rodon was excellent for Buffalo last year. This would be his major league debut today?
It is, and you talk about somebody that had a quick rise to the organizational ladder. He was actually college teammates with Will Robertson, who's an outfielder for the Bisons, into his second season now. Robertson was drafted in 2019, and Rodon was drafted just a couple of years ago, both out of Creighton, where they were college teammates. And the thing that John Schneider has mentioned a lot about Alan Rodon and Ross Atkins is just his preparedness coming to the field. He struggled when he came up to AAA last year, hitting in the mid-200s. He made a subtle adjustment. He's one of those guys, so he grew up in the Milwaukee area. He has a batting stance similar to Craig Counsell, if you can remember that. He's pretty much straight up, and the bat is way behind his ear hole.
Yep.
And he made a subtle adjustment to change the way he stepped with his footing, and it really made a big difference. He was the player of the month here in the International League, hitting .354 in August. He was just tearing the cover off the ball. Really good outfielder. He can play any of the three outfield positions. Center field may be the toughest because he hasn't played there as much, but he can play either corner outfield. And the one thing that Will Robertson had told me when Alan Rodon was going to join us, because I wanted to get the scouting report on him, he said, as a freshman, now Will Robertson was a junior when he got drafted by the Blue Jays, but as a freshman, when they were teammates, Alan Rodon was in Will Robertson's lifting group, and he was the guy that could lift the most. He was the strongest of – it was with sophomores, juniors, even seniors. And even as a freshman, he's just that strong, and he's carried that all the way through.
Interesting. I talked to Mike Wilner a couple of days ago about him, and he said that he was studying to be a rocket scientist at Creighton. Roden.
Yeah, and that's one thing the Blue Jays have really focused in on, a lot of players that are very smart and cerebral and are able to understand the strike zone. So it shouldn't be a surprise that someone like Roden is very intellectual, and even someone who's not going to start the year in Buffalo because he's on the injured list, Josh Kasevich, another one of those players that comes out of the University of Oregon, a second-round pick, really good plate selection.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Spencer Horwitz is a name that was here the last couple of seasons. These guys really figure out a way to make that an advantage for them, and I think that's one of the things the Blue Jays look for, is the guys that can really focus in on and really make the pitchers work a little bit harder and work the strike and the count to their advantage.
With Pat Malacaro, the Bisons are scheduled to open tomorrow at 2. He'll be on the call. It's against Rochester. Hopefully the rain stays away. I've been into some of these pitching prospects over the years with Toronto. Manoa, Nate Pearson was interesting for a minute, Tiedemann, but injuries have kind of derailed all of them. Who's this year's version of that guy, if there is one?
Jake Bloss would be the name to look out for. He's currently ranked the number 6 prospect in the organization, according to MLB Pipeline. He was part of the Yusei Kikuchi trade last year. Joey Loperfido will be in Buffalo as well. He was part of the trade, Will Wagner. But for Bloss, he's a guy that has 6-7 different pitches in his arsenal, but he throws hard. That's what makes him a little bit different. Played collegiately his final season at Georgetown, so you want to talk about another guy who is very cerebral on the field and especially on the mound. He made 8 starts with the Bisons at the end of last season after being acquired. And struggled to maybe find a rhythm, but when he finally did, the results, the wins and losses weren't there, but you could tell the stuff was a lot better. I had really good spin rate. The breaking pitches were very crisp and sharp, so there's high expectations for Bloss. He made his major league debut with Houston last year, didn't get into a game with Toronto, but is definitely somebody on the radar that he can hit mid to upper 90s with the fastball, spot it very well, and then again with those other secondary pitches that he can work and really keep hitters guessing. I think big things are expected from him, and even tomorrow's starter, Eric Lauer, who is a veteran who has actually opened a season before with San Diego in 2019. I think that's one of the nice things, is you've got the young prospects in Bloss, but you also have some veterans who can help a guy like Jake Bloss along the way when he struggles. And that's another thing the Blue Jays have tried to do over the years, of have those mentor type pitchers that understand, I may go to the big leagues, I may not, but while I'm in AAA, I need to help some of the young guys along too. And I think that's one of the reasons why a guy like Eric Lauer was signed to a deal this winter.
You know, for me, I'm somewhere between casual and hardcore. I want there to be like one really cool prospect, you know, somebody that I'm expecting to see play in the majors, and then I can have my "I saw him play when" story. And then also I want a couple guys that I know who they are, right? Name recognition. And so you mentioned Lauer, and I think Christian Bethencourt would be this.
Yes, definitely. Several years in the big leagues. He's going to pretty much, I think, assume the starting catching role here in Buffalo. In the past couple of years, you look back, whether it be Danny Jansen, Alejandro Kirk for just a little bit of time, even Reese McGuire, there were some catching prospects that came through Buffalo. The last couple of years, it's been veterans that you may need that backup catcher role. Tyler Heineman, who is with the Blue Jays now, has been up and down in the organization a handful of times. So Christian Bethencourt, even an Ali Sanchez, who's had a little bit of big league experience, those guys will be here in Buffalo, because if Tyler Heineman goes down with injury, struggles at all, I think you could see Christian Bethencourt, who really, I think, to me, everything I had heard coming out of spring training really endeared himself well to the organization and someone that everybody spoke highly of, so would not be a shock at all to see him in the big leagues.
The Blue Jays on the board in their opener against Baltimore on a two-run Andrés Giménez home run here in the fourth, 6-2 Orioles. Pat, today I've been asking fans to hear their backstory on why whoever is their favorite team. What is yours?
I grew up an Oakland A's fan.
All right.
I always tell people I'm so old that
Careful.
As a kid growing up, you know, playing t-ball, wiffle ball, whatever, even basketball in the summer, I really didn't spend a lot of time in the house in the summer at night. So really, I'd only watch baseball on Saturday afternoons. And because I'm a little bit older, I'm in my 40s, my first memories of baseball were the late 80s. And the Bash Brothers, the Oakland A's, were always good. They were always on TV. And I had a Jose Canseco poster hanging up in the basement at my parents' house. I mean, I was all in on the A's. We would drive to Cleveland to see them play at Old Municipal Stadium once a year. Just really enjoyed watching the A's as a kid growing up. So, you know, the Moneyball story that was written by Michael Lewis and turned into a movie, something that I really followed as a at that time, like high school, early college years. But the A's were my team forever. And unfortunate the way that it ended in Oakland. I'd wished that it would end up, you know, different, maybe a new stadium, figure out a way to make it work. But, you know, talk about the Blue Jays playing here in Buffalo. I think the Oakland A's and even Tampa Bay to some extent because of their situation kind of took the blueprint that the Blue Jays and Bisons had from here at this ballpark and are going to make it work out in Sacramento in the A's case for the next couple of years.
Did you get to the Coliseum? I went to one game there.
I didn't. And
okay.
Really, my only chance was going to be last year, and I decided, you know what? I don't want to be there for the final couple of games.
Yeah.
I don't know if I really want to be there for that, you know?
I get that. Yeah, that would have been weird, if not ugly. I saw Toronto play out there. I guess it would have been 98 or 99. Whatever year it was that the Giants opened their stadium that they're still in, that was really cool. I was out there with a girlfriend, and the Giants had opened. It was what? Pac Bell. Mm-hmm. Originally, and like they were talking about how incredible it was, and you could never get a ticket. Like the whole season was sold out, you know, too bad. So we're out there, she's there for work, and I just called in the morning at the perfect time when the Expos players gave back their tickets that they weren't using. So not only did we get two for this Friday night game at the new stadium, it might have been like the fifth or tenth game in the history of the stadium, but we would sit right behind the plate because that's where, like, those are the good seats. The players are not using them. And I went to Oakland that week, so I got both boxes checked from Northern Carolina. Now I have to get to Sacramento, apparently. That's going to count.
In San Francisco, I've been to that ballpark, and that's one of those stadiums. I mean, to me, that is my favorite because as much as I enjoy PNC Field down in PNC Park down in Pittsburgh, the backdrop is man-made. It's created by the skyline, the skyscrapers. In Northern California, you can't recreate what they have in the bay there in San Francisco. So to me, for my money, I could sit in the upper deck in the last row at that stadium and be content for 81 games a year.
I hear that. Behind the plate? That view from behind the plate, yeah. Pittsburgh is the same in that way. I think the best view would be from home plate, but I like that point. Very good, Pat. Well, congrats on your success. Hoping for a good season here and a dry day tomorrow.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it. Looking forward to getting the broadcast underway with Duke McGuire starting at 1 over on the sister station, the Bet 1520.
All right. Best to Duke as well. Thanks, Pat.
Thank you.
Yeah, boy. Thinking about that trip now. San Fran the first time. Been there another time, maybe two. But that was really amazing. Like, I just remember, like I said, hearing about how you cannot get a ticket. Like, oh, it's too bad. And then I was lucky. I'm sure there are people that know exactly when, you know, they've got somebody on the inside or something, exactly when certain tickets come available. It might have been like 10:30 in the morning of the game, something like that. And yeah, we're good. We've got like 30 seats. So lucky me. Sal Capaccio coming up at 5. He'll take a break from watching his Yankees here in their opener. They're up 2-1 on Milwaukee in the 6th. The Sabres host the Penguins tonight, pregame at 6. This is Mike Schoep on WGR.